This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred show for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Harold Good. Harold is the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland. Harold, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's an honor to be able to participate in your show.
Great to have you. Let's start off with who you are and what you do for Frederick County, Maryland, please.
Okay, well, I'm the purchasing director for Frederick County, Maryland, and we buy anything through office supplies, through construction projects, and we do services as well as commodities. And we're probably very typical in terms of a county government purchasing department that does the full gamut of services.
Okay. Now, Frederick County, Maryland's relatively well-off state, so we're not poor. And Frederick County is a pretty big county, so you got a nice tax base. So you have, you know, probably a number of companies calling on you on a pretty regular basis. Give me an idea of your daily activities as far as, you know, getting unsolicited bids and your normal workload of putting out bids.
Well, we have a vendor base that signs up to do business with us through our online vendor matching process, and we at any time have a number of bid processes out there, competitive processes out there. We do requests for proposal, typically for services, an invitation for bids where we can identify precisely what it is we want. The processes are typically governed by, if we know exactly what we want, then pretty much price determines who's successful in the process. And if it's services and things other than price are important, and we do the request for proposals, and we weigh other factors in addition to price, and we like to call that best value.
Okay. Now, do you use any of the outside bid notification services to announce what you're doing, or do you rely on your vendor registration?
Yes, we use eMaryland Marketplace, which is a great resource that the state of Maryland has. There's a similar local program in the state of Virginia that does the same thing for Virginia agencies, and they're very effective because it's a one-stop center for people to sign up and be able to do business with all the state agencies and then the local agencies that participate. So we find that very helpful.
Okay. So you just use the local ones. You don't do any that go out to like the national bid boards?
It depends on what it is. What we try to do is we try to go local or regional or nationally, depending on what it takes to get a representative input from the source that we are trying to identify. For example, if we're looking at something where all the competition is on a national basis, then we'll go to the national sourcing. Regional, we'll use the Maryland Marketplace. Mm-hmm. And then if it's something that small local businesses can do, then we simply advertise it in our local network.
Okay. What I know that you have, and a lot of Maryland has local purchasing preferences. How does this program run?
Well, I think if you look at what's happening in the real world, those programs are typically now being tweaked to kind of identify advantages that local governments can do for local businesses, short of providing a preference. Preference being identified as a percent advantage that someone local gets as opposed to someone outside. And one of the reasons for that happening is that agencies like us in Frederick County want to protect our vendors when they try to do business outside Frederick County. So we have a reciprocal preference that basically says if you have a barrier against our contractors or vendors doing business in your locale, then we automatically have one against someone from your locale bidding here. So that reciprocal preference tends to level the playing field. And in its place, what we try to do is outreach in terms of training people how to do business with us. And if you think about it, for services, there's a lot of built-in advantages because they don't have to commute as far. They don't have to put their people up, depending on the project, in a hotel overnight if they're local. So there's a lot of advantages for locals to be able to trade off of if they just have the right knowledge and how to interface with us.
That's great. Now, what are the let's talk about some of the cooperative agreements out there that are supposed to be nationwide, like U.S. communities, et cetera.
Yes, U.S. communities is probably the largest and the best known, and it provides a broad range of commodities and some services that combine, in some cases, the buying power of up to 10,000 government agencies nationwide. And that leverages a very, very advantageous price that we couldn't achieve if we bid those things on our own. And they're bid by a public agency in a public process, and then the results of that are made available to participating agencies all over the country. So it's very cost-effective for the participating agencies, and at the same time, it's participative because everyone gets a chance to compete for the contracts.
Okay, now, do you leverage U.S. communities?
We use U.S. communities, and we use quite a few other things. One of the other ones that's gaining in popularity right now is one called Houston-Galveston Area Co-op, and it, as the name implies, originated in Texas, but it's now used nationally. And one of the advantages of that is that it has the ability to buy large equipment such as fire apparatus in that sort of an environment where you have the advantage of a number of agencies going together and pulling their resources. And it also has the advantage because of the economy of scale, it actually makes discounts available for the ancillary equipment that goes on the trucks, not just the trucks themselves. So that's a methodology that saves us quite a bit of money.
Okay, so if you need to replace equipment on the truck, this would be a vehicle where you could go.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I know you use, when we were setting up the interview, we discussed a couple others. Tell me about the Washington Council of Governments.
The Washington Council of Governments is regional. And, for example, it's a great resource for doing things such as electricity, natural gas, that sort of thing, where you can pull the resource of the member agencies and then get a very, very advantageous price for the commodity side of electricity, for example, or natural gas, that sort of thing. And there's other services and other commodities that are also pulled that way to the advantage of everyone. And it's a very effective mechanism for, again, leveraging the combined resources. And one of the advantages of that in the region versus the national contracts is obviously we don't have one national supplier of electricity, but that tends to be more regional. So that's more practical for things like that where you basically couldn't do it on a national basis. So it's the largest combination of agencies pulling their resource that makes sense because they have a common provider and can leverage the discount.
Cool. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When I come back, we are going to discuss a little more on the regional cooperative purchasing and migrate into how local governments can use the GSA schedules. We will return in a moment.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Where this all converges is with the end user. And the end user having a tablet kind of a device or a smartphone needs to have access to any of those types of applications locations. They don't care where they're running. They just know that from their immediate device, they need to have it and they need the result quickly. And this is where the federated identity management interacts with the application and the data fabric, which interacts with the cloud-based infrastructure, and it all comes together to provide that high-performance, real-time, agile, and secure capability for the end user.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal managers say they feel left out of key discussions between agency leaders and employees' unions. At some agencies, they're not invited to forums meant to encourage cooperation between management and labor groups, but they're the ones who have to carry out many of the decisions that come from those meetings. They gave Office of Personnel Management Director John Barry an earful recently at the Federal Managers Association Conference in Washington.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance to federal employees at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also has a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. WEPA gives its policyholders more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn about all of your options. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
As cybersecurity threats intensify, federal agencies are reviewing their technology management framework, looking towards increased reliance on continuous monitoring and collaboration. Join AFSEA Bethesda on March 23rd at the Bethesda North Marriott as a panel of chief information security officers from DOT, DOJ, and DOE share their thoughts on how collaborative initiatives will redefine the security spectrum in the coming year. Register today at afseabethesda.org/marbreakfast.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Harold Good. Harold is the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland, and we're discussing local purchasing, buying activities, cooperative arrangements, national programs. Tell me a little bit about the Baltimore Regional Cooperative Purchasing Committee, please.
Well, the Baltimore Regional Cooperative Committee combines the purchasing power for agencies, including the city of Baltimore, Baltimore County, and then surrounding counties and cities. And it works in a very similar manner to the Washington Council of Governments in terms of pooling the buying power for commodities and service. And again, because it's regional, it has the advantage and kind of zeroes in on those things that doesn't make sense to leverage on a national basis, because you don't have the same suppliers or service providers on a national level, but there's a commonality in the region, and so it tends to concentrate on regional issues, and it saves a lot of money for all the participating agencies.
Okay, so once again, just a lot of activity, and you had indicated that there's going to be some cooperation between Washington Council and the Baltimore Regional.
Yes, the two kind of grew up independently, the Washington Council of Governments and the Baltimore Cooperative. But now what's happening is they're pulling resources, and where there's a commonality between why they're leveraging the combined purchasing power in both both regions or both metropolitan areas. And, of course, that results in additional savings. And it also cuts down on the processing time because you obviously only have to do one solicitation instead of two in that environment.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. I'm sure you're aware that in the federal arena, the 1102, the contracting officer community, has shrunk, shall we say, over the last decade. Has the same thing happened at the state and local level? Or are there fewer professionals like yourself out there doing more?
That kind of varies from agency to agency. I think some agencies recognize that in this environment, professional procurement is a service that actually saves money and helps you protect your resources. And so some agencies have retained their staff in this environment. Some have actually grown, but also then in agencies where they kind of do across the board cuts, where everybody cuts 5 or 10%, there have been cuts in public procurement. And so I think there's probably less today due to that. And also, there have been a significant amount of retirements in the procurement profession, both at the state and local and the federal level.
Yeah, and I don't know how you got from point A to point B, but I don't imagine that too many kids, 7, 8, 10, you know, they're thinking NBA, NFL, not I want to grow up to be a state procurement official or a county procurement official.
It's always a standing joke at our conferences, and someone always in one of their workshops says, how many of you out there when you were a kid decided that you wanted to be a procurement agent, and no one ever raises their hand?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't think I'd grow up to be a marketing guy. Wasn't what I was thinking about.
Those of us in public procurement usually arrive to some other... We kind of evolve through some other profession and end up kind of driven by the need of our organization.
Yeah, and you know, number one, thank you for doing what you do, because I've known you for a while now. We'll get into how we met a little later on, but you know, I appreciate the local, state, and federal procurement community, because without you guys, I wouldn't be doing much. And you do save the taxpayers a boatload of money getting great deals. Let's migrate a little bit into how state and local governments do or do not use the GSA programs.
Well, the GSA programs historically have been available to state and local governments on some of the schedules. For example, Schedule 70, which is high-tech procurements, where the GSA does a really, really unique job of being able to identify and leverage the high-tech requirements for IT sort of support in those sort of applications. And then also for Homeland Security, where standardization and availability very quickly in an emergency situation is important. So those two schedules have been available to state and local governments without question. Now what's happening in this high-tech world is more and more some of the other schedules are gradually getting to be available. And kind of what underlies that is kind of interesting, because one of the big resistance politically for states, say, in the Midwest who are participating in GSA schedules was the fact that it was impossible for their local businesses to be able to compete effectively for GSA contracts. Now, where we have video conferencing, where people can attend pre-proposal conferences or pre-bid conferences electronically and via video, and they can compete electronically, there's less and less resistance to that. And so gradually, those contracts are being more available nationally for state and local agencies.
Okay. Now, I don't want any exact numbers or anything, but does Frederick County leverage the GSA schedules on occasion?
Yes, we do. And we look at GSA in terms of a number of things. One example that I could use that we've done is we have 26 fire stations in Frederick County, some volunteer and some owned by the county, but we provide some services to all of them. And so we use the GSA schedule to standardize in terms of our backup generators, some of our alarm systems, and some of our systems that made sense to standardize among all the fire stations. That involved a lot of different subcontractors and was a process that just wouldn't have been practical for us to do on our own. And through leveraging a GSA schedule, that had a very, very good outcome.
Okay, so how you know, you have a variety of cooperative programs designed for state and local governments. We've discussed those, discussed how GSA programs are available and becoming more so. How is this changing public procurement?
I think public procurement more and more is oriented toward having professional staff do the one-of-a-kind special things that are unique to our agencies. And for things that we do that are similar to other agencies, more and more we look to tying in with a cooperative effort and leveraging a national or regional effort with other agencies. And if someone's doing it and they're doing it effectively and our local vendors have had the opportunity to participate in it, then that's a matter of choosing what's the most appropriate of, and there increasingly are a number of choices. You can go to more than one of the cooperatives or the regional government cooperative efforts. And so you have some choices. So you kind of are choosing which cooperative makes the most sense and the best value to the taxpayer. And you use your professional staff for the one of a kind things that are unique to your agency.
Cool. So you've got all of these things to choose from, and you're saving us money. But how does all of this impact those local companies that want to come in? How do they get started?
Well, I think that's one of the big important things to always keep in mind with this. And we try to reach out and hold seminars or participate in other people's seminars in how to do business. It's interesting because I participate in seminars in Baltimore and Washington, and I find that a lot of Frederick County companies actually go out of the county and participate in those. At the same time, we participate with the Chamber of Commerce and local trade organizations and so forth to try to reach out. And what we try to do is for those things that are best supplied locally, and there's a lot of them. For example, you have somebody that are maintaining a lot of your services and your buildings and so forth. It makes sense to have someone that you know and is reliable and local and you can call on and you are at the top of their priority list. And they can build on that if they want to, and they can expand that to reach out beyond these borders. But we try to lean over backwards to give them an opportunity. What we try to say is we don't guarantee you a contract, but we certainly try to guarantee you the opportunity to participate.
Excellent. That's a great place to break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Harold Good, who is the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about local purchasing and then migrate into other issues impacting the federal, state, and local purchasing community. Back in a few.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention plan to spend $54 million on a nationwide anti-tobacco campaign. The graphic messages span TV, radio, billboards, bus signs, and print ads, all designed to get smokers to quit and keep young people from starting. CDC says smoking causes 443,000 preventable deaths every year, but its ad spending will be dwarfed by the marketing budget of the tobacco industry, which spends about $10 billion a year.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Tony Vernetti will be joined by guests from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Association of Federal External Civil Rights Specialists to hear about recent EEOC issues and events.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Hi, this is Brooks Like of the Washington Capitals.
Back down to Like on the right side. Joe Ward in the circle. A chance for Like. He scores! Brooks Like, top tees, pass Crawford, 3:19 to go in the first period. Caps 2, Chicago nothing.
Catch every minute of Caps hockey right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Computers can search for words very quickly, but when it comes to images, our brains are much better. So engineers are exploring how we can help computers. If you're web surfing for, say, a beautiful or funny-looking picture, search engines have a tough time knowing exactly what you want. So Paul Scheide, a Columbia University biomedical engineer, is monitoring people's brain activity as he shows them pictures at the rate of 10 a second.
You might see an image and realize, ooh, that's interesting. You might not be able to then, in that fraction of a second, really describe it in detail. You just know that it caught your attention.
Scheide says a computer can then match that brain response to a picture and look for similar images.
We know what the brain is good at in terms of visual processing. We know what computers are very good at. Our goal is to create a system that leverages the advantages of both.
Such a combo might be especially useful in high-pressure situations like stock trading or military analysis, where lots of visual information must be analyzed quickly. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Harold Good. Harold is the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland. Harold, between the break, I sprung a new topic on you, and I appreciate you for picking it up. On the federal side of the universe, the use of the SmartPay card accounts for about $30 billion annually, $20 billion of which is exclusively the purchase card. The other two portions are travel and fleet. Give me an idea of how how widespread the card is used in Frederick and possibly in Maryland, if you know, and what it's used for.
Well, we have what we call a procurement card, which I think is very similar to the federal card that you're talking about, that's used for small purchases. And it's a very effective methodology of doing small purchasing where the vendor gets paid right away, and one of the substantial parts of the savings is the processing, because there's various estimates out there what it costs in today's world to process a purchase order, but most of those estimates are in the area of $90 to $100 per purchase order,
right,
which is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the cost of processing a payment through a procurement card, which is typically a Visa or MasterCard, is significantly less.
Yeah, if you're buying a couple of hundred dollars worth of office supplies and the paper-based procurement cost is $95, you've just added 50% to your cost.
Right, exactly, and that adds up very quickly. And so the use of procurement cards, I think, is almost universally accepted now in state and local agencies, at least the ones that I'm aware of. Regionally in the Washington, D.C. area, increasingly a lot of the agencies are using a card that was competed to Fairfax County, Virginia. And then there's actually a rebate that comes back to the government agency depending on the volume. And it leverages the power of all the agencies cooperating. So every time a new agency joins, a little bit of more of that, a small percentage comes back to the government.
Right. Same thing on the federal side. The rebate program is really one of the highlights of how it's a win-win-win. It's a win for the taxpayer, win for the government purchaser, and a win for the vendor.
Yes. It's a very effective tool, and like the state of Maryland now pretty much has that for buying commodities, they don't want to process anything in a purchase order less than $5,000.
Okay, so what is your normal purchase limit on your purchase card then? Because at the federal level, it's three.
It depends on what it is. Our highest one that we have per transaction is $2,500 typically.
Okay.
And a lot of them are $500. And a lot of them are used for things like you already alluded to, office supplies. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, one of the uses is what we call a ghost card. And what we mean by ghost card is that the employee doesn't have to put their card in every time. If you log on to the firm that we have our office supply contract with, the logon ID immediately identifies what the procurement card is, so they don't have to enter it every time. It also has a lot of built-in safety features, such as the default shipment point, which can't be changed. But it identifies what the card is and actually even can identify the default account number in the agency.
Cool. So you're leveraging a program that is managed by the Fairfax County government, the Fairfax City?
It's Fairfax County that put the program in place and then made it available to surrounding government agencies.
Okay. So once again, regional sort of a cooperative thing, but this time focused on the plastic.
Exactly.
Cool. That's great because, I mean, you know, between, you know, the national capital area, Baltimore and surrounding areas, we have a fairly robust economy. So those counties are not the ones that are at the bottom of the, let's see, what do we have? Something like 3,000 counties in the country. And I would imagine that most of the local counties are in the top 10% of those as far as revenue goes.
Yes, that's true. When you look at the statistics for the most well-off counties, a lot of the surrounding counties are right there at the top.
Cool. All right. So now we know how you purchase or at least some of the lower-end products or service. When we were setting up the interview, you had a couple of points predicated on how other things are purchased. You have a knowledge-based procurement program and a process-based program. What are these and what's the difference, please?
I think one of the stigmas that public procurement is trying to move away from is this low-bid mentality. And if you think about it, historically, one of the criticisms, and I think rightfully so, of public procurement was the fact that if we buy a car in our private lives, we look at things other than the cost. And case in point, you know, back years ago, you know, if we just looked at cost, certainly none of us were going to be buying Yugos. And that's exaggerating the point I'm trying to make.
Sure.
But it's kind of illustrative. And in today's world, what we mean by knowledge base is we try to create processes where we look at the expected life of what we're buying. We look at what the maintenance costs are and all the ancillary costs, and we try to look at that intelligently what we call knowledge-based as opposed to this low-bid mentality. And in the past, there were companies that made things that they only sold the government because private sector or individuals wouldn't buy it because they looked at it in terms of things other than price. And in a bid, they tried to make it so that it would be the low bid in the door, and it obviously typically didn't last as long or was more subject to some increased costs in the life of the ownership of the product. So I think we've taken a lot of steps in terms of trying to reverse that, and that's what we call knowledge-based versus the process, where the old process thing was people put things on a requisition, and the lowest price got it, regardless of what the consequences were in terms of the impact or how long it lasted.
Now, is there still a role for process-based?
Oh, there's definitely a role for process, because one of the key factors in government procurement is the fairness of the process, being able to keep a level playing field, and making sure that there's not favoritism, and that needs to be closely regulated, and there's certainly a process that we need to all abide by, and to keep the credibility in the process and keep the trust of the taxpayers and the vendor community and everyone else involved. We certainly have to pay attention to process and the integrity of the process.
Okay. Now, I told people earlier I was going to explain how we met. I read about you three or four years back in government product news, and I believe it was in relationship to your role in the NPI, the National Purchasing Institute.
Institute. We changed the name since then. It's now National Procurement Institute.
Right. But anyway, I read about you there, and when I see any name anymore, the first thing I do is go to LinkedIn and look people up, and lo and behold, there you were. So I reached out. I said, I read about you in GPN. This is who I am. This is what I do. And I asked you to connect. You did. You've actually spoken at least one of my events, and I'm hoping to have you back at some of our new events at Capital College over in Laurel.
Would love to.
We'd love to have you. But let's talk a little bit. Actually, we'll save it till after the break. We're going to talk when we come back. We're going to talk about how some government professionals are using social media. And we're going to talk about the National Procurement Institute. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Under Governor McDonald's leadership, Virginia is moving in the right direction. Unemployment's down to 5.8%, the lowest in 3 years and lowest in the Southeast. $1 billion in budget surpluses. But Virginia Democrats are threatening to stop our state's progress, leaving Richmond without passing a budget, threatening to shut down state government to protect their own political power, putting at risk essential funding for schools, law enforcement, healthcare, and transportation. Acting more like Washington politicians than Virginia public servants. The Richmond Times-Dispatch calls Senate Democrats' refusal to pass a budget brinksmanship driven by power and ego. The Virginian Pilot says they are obstructionists and more interested in protecting their power than doing their jobs. The Washington Post calls the Democrats self-serving and cynical. We can't let Virginia go the way of Washington. Visit PutVirginiaFirst.com. Sign the petition to support Governor McDonald's sound budget. There's too much at stake.
The Republican Party of Virginia sponsored this ad.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Interested in boomboxes?
Yeah, I just got the iPhone 4S, and I want a docking system for when I'm at home.
Easy answer. The Insignia boombox with HD radio technology receives all the HD2, HD3 channels here in town and has iTunes tagging for your iPhone 4S.
Oh yeah, iTunes tagging is cool. Tag and buy songs you hear on HD radio stations.
Yep, and it's only $99.
Wow, $99 and works with iPhone 4S? Lead the way.
Learn about HD radio technology at hdradio.com. More radio, more value.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
An Afghan soldier shot to death a 22-year-old Marine at an outpost in southwestern Afghanistan last month. This was a previously undisclosed case. It was at least the seventh killing of an American military member by his ally in the past 6 weeks, according to the Marines. Lance Corporal Edward J. Dykus of Greenville, Mississippi, was shot in the back of the head on February 1st while standing guard at the U.S.-Afghan base in Marja in Helmand Province. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and Defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Join the Brain Trust of federal leaders this April 15th through 18th in Cambridge, Maryland for the Federal Senior Management Conference and feed off the thoughts, experiences, and ideas of your peers while tackling timely management issues being faced by government today. Presented by Fed Insider News, the Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for federal senior managers. Presented for government, by government, and open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Harold Good. Harold's the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland. He's also the President of the National Procurement Institute. And we met via social media, and we've met personally since then. You know, you're not far from me. We haven't met, outside of professional meetings, so. But let's talk a little bit about how local governments and government officials in general are using social media.
I think there's a number of ways that social media is being used effectively. And one of them is that it is increasingly replacing the old listserv. And the downside of the listservs was that you had it on a subscription basis where, like, I would connect with colleagues in other government agencies and public procurement, and that for things that you want to talk about maybe on a more narrow interest level, that worked just fine. But increasingly, there's a sense of the advantages of involving other people in the conversations. And social media, such as on LinkedIn, for example, the National Procurement Institute site on LinkedIn, which we now have a little over 800 members. But that has quite a few people from public procurement, private sector procurement, and then it also has participants from risk management, vendors, energy conservation folk, all sorts of participants. And that kind of broad perspective, I think, enriches everybody and is mutually beneficial. And so when people become a member of groups on LinkedIn, they can belong to multiple groups. They can cross-pollinate ideas across the groups. But I think it carries a huge benefit in terms of someone in government because you get a much broader perspective and are open to a lot broader conversation and a lot more inputs from stakeholders on a broad basis.
Right. And if you want input, you can start a discussion on one of the groups. And if you simply want to monitor the discussions, there's several groups that are extremely well managed that have a lot of good information passing in the discussion areas. But you used a phrase, I want you to explain it. A lot of people are way too young, excuse me, to remember what a listserv was, or in some instances, I guess, still is. I used to subscribe to several, but briefly describe it.
Yeah, and listserv would be where you subscribe to email, and then you automatically, well, depending, you can manage whether you want to get it in a batch or get every single one. But basically, you subscribe to a list where you can interact with people that also subscribe to that list. It's an email list, but typically they're very narrow in focus. For example, you know, a professional organization, we still have a listserv in National Procurement Institute. It's not used very broadly anymore. It's kind of been replaced by social media.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of the email based way of communicating, and it was good in its day, but it's kind of outlived its usefulness for most.
Right.
Most applications.
I found them extremely beneficial. Not the least reason being that you shared a tremendous amount of pertinent information to the vendor community there, but that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was to share best practices, to post questions, and to just to share professional information. And it was, you know, you could get it in your email inbox, so no travel necessary. You could tell people about meetings where maybe you should go and get together face-to-face. I thought they were very cool in their time.
Yeah, they were incrementally very, very a huge step from what preceded them.
Yeah, which was rumor, innuendo, and snail mail.
Right.
And, you know, there's still a place for all three, but all things being equal, social media is you know, like light years ahead. Now, on the National Procurement Institute LinkedIn group, how closely do you monitor who comes into that group? Do you toss people out for spamming the group, you know, simply being there to, you know, sell the latest, greatest widget?
Well, we have a group that approves members, and I'm one of that group, and there's four of us, and we kind of operate, all of us are on the board of directors of NPI, so we kind of share, I think we basically measure people by the same thing.
Okay.
We do have some problems with people that try to post things that just don't belong there, and sometimes they're well-intentioned, and they're good things. It's just that it's not the right environment for them.
I love to hear about well-managed groups, and I'm going to take a look at it, and you know, four people willing, maybe they'll let me join.
Yours will get them approved instantly, I guarantee you.
Always nice to think so. But while we're on the topic, tell me about the National Procurement Institute. What is the focus? What do you guys do?
Well, the National Procurement Institute is actually the public sector affiliate of ISM. And ISM is the one that has all those
Institute
monthly
for Supply
reports
Management.
In terms of how manufacturing is doing and all mm-hmm. those cost indexes and all that sort of thing that people are familiar with. So NPI is the public sector arm of that. And NPI is smaller than some of the other national organizations. And that's both probably a good and a bad thing. The good thing about it is that it's kind of a group that you can get very effective networking and feedback through. And I think it works very well for that. There's certainly other national groups that are also effective. And in today's among any of the public procurement organizations, they basically cooperate and try to do things on a cooperative basis. And in the old days, back a long time ago, there was some competition because they supported different professional credentials. In today's world, almost every professional purchasing organization encourages its members to become certified and is open to member choice of which certification they're going to choose to pursue.
Okay, now, speaking of certifications, I did notice a CPPO after your name. What does this stand for?
Yeah, and that's the Universal Public Procurement Organization that is probably the most common one in public procurement. It has two levels, the CPPB, which is for journey-level buyers, and then the CPPO, which is for managers. And that's probably the most common one for people that specialize in public procurement. The CPM and the CPSM and some of those are a little bit more rooted in the private sector, but they're still valuable for public purchasing people to have. It's just their focus is a little more supply chain and a little bit more on the private sector, but that's always good to have also.
Okay. Now, I'm certainly hopeful that that Frederick County and other counties in Maryland are supportive of their procurement officers getting these professional certifications.
Well, in our case, we are, and we basically have a mandate for our professional staff. First of all, there's a higher employment bracket for having attained the certification, and then one has to maintain that, and there's continuing education requirements. And if one comes in on the basis of being certified, you have to maintain your certification in order to maintain that status in the organization.
Cool. Any upcoming events you want to plug for MPI?
Well, our national conference is going to be in Houston, Texas, on the third week of October. And certainly that's an option for people that, both for the vendor community and participants. It's going to be a good event, and I think we're going to have some excellent speakers. And that's the plug for that.
And what's the website for NPI?
It's npiconnection.org.
npiconnection.org, and you can find all the information about the annual conference there, and vendors are welcome.
Right, and you can find us also on Twitter, and there's actually two groups on Twitter, NPI Conference and NPI Procurement. We're also on GovLoop, LinkedIn, and to a certain extent on Facebook, although Facebook we don't have a big...
Harold, I greatly appreciate your time today. Harold Good has been my guest. He is the Director of Purchasing for Frederick County, Maryland. And don't forget about the NPI event the third week of October of this year. Our first Government Market Masters seminars with Capital College will start in late April. Information will be first posted in the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn. And I thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.